Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 23.
Welcome to RestaurantUnstoppable.com. Listen to successful restaurant professionals as they discuss the tools, tactics, and services they use to better lead, manage, and market their restaurants. Join our community and make your restaurant dreams unstoppable. Here's your host, Eric Cacciatore.
Yo, what's going on, all you unstoppable restaurant professionals? It's your host, Eric Cacciatore. I have a great show for you today, and like always, I can't wait to hit play. Before I do, just a friendly reminder that everything we talk about today can be found in the show notes at www.restaurantunstoppable.com/23. Today's episode is number 23, so just Restaurant Unstoppable, then today's episode. That's how you can find all the great stuff we talk about and links to the books, products, services, and recaps to everything we discussed. So don't be afraid to connect with me, like always. Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google+. I'm out there. I'm easy to find, and I can't wait to get some feedback. And I'm talking in a quiet voice right now because it is 10 minutes of midnight, and it's been crazy with finals, so I appreciate you guys being patient with me. I'm getting to this episode out the very last possible minute, but I hope you enjoy today's show. Our guest is awesome. He's a lot of fun. I know you'll love him. Here he is. Have fun. All right, with excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, Philip Iona, a.k.a. Ippy. How you doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm fantastic, and I can't wait to pick your brain and find out what has made you so successful. But before we do that, let me give you a quick introduction. Ippy, at the age of 23, is already a veteran of the industry and has grown up in the restaurant biz. He is a graduate of Le Cordon Bleu, San Francisco, and may be most well-known for his role in the cast of Season 8's Food Network star as a finalist with Team Giada. Most recently, he has been recognized by Forbes magazine as one of 2012 or 2013?
I think it's 2012.
2012's best 30 under 30. Today, you can find him working as a chef proprietor at Three Fat Pigs, which is a Hawaiian barbecue over in Wakula. I'm probably saying that wrong. You can correct me.
Yeah, actually, no. It's sorry. It's Three Fat Pigs. It's my gas. I have two restaurants.
Okay.
So I got Three Fat Pigs. My gastro pub.
Okay.
And that's like a more, you know, sit down, right, seasonal menu. We have about 50 different beers on tap.
Awesome.
It's more of like a gastro pub. And then my other place is called Ippy's Hawaiian Barbecue, and that's more of like a plate lunch place.
Awesome.
So two different spots.
Great. Yeah. So fill us in a little bit more. Tell me about your history, how you got started, you know, growing up in the industry, what it was like. Just kind of give us the big picture. I just gave a brief introduction.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up here on the Big Island of Hawaii, born and raised. My family was in the restaurant business my whole life. So growing up, my dad had a big Hawaiian plate lunch restaurant that I grew up in. I mean, that's where I started cooking. And I spent most of my life there. It's really, you know, it's things like teriyaki beef, mm-hmm. chicken katsu, Korean pork. It's kind of a big mesh up of what we call Hawaiian plate lunch, which is really a mesh up of, you know, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Filipino food.
Yeah.
So I grew up there. My mom actually about 9 to 10 years ago got an Italian restaurant. So going through high school, I started working at my mom's Italian restaurant. My mom's from New York. She's an Italian lady from New York. So
all right.
She opened an Italian spot here. So I kind of grew up there and then working there with her. And then I knew I wanted to be a chef from when I was young. I mean, when I was at my dad's restaurant, I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I already knew what I had to do and how much work it was, so that wasn't an issue.
As soon as
I graduated high school.
I was going to ask, is there one moment when you knew during your childhood that, like, was there one specific time where you were like, wow, this is it, this is what I want to do? Does any one point stand out to you?
There's a lot of little memories, honestly. Like, you know, I mean, things, you know, a lot of different things kind of added to wanting to do it. I was a big fan of Emeril Lagasse, like most kids and people my age, you know. It's kind of like we grew up watching him. We had this lady named Masayo, and she was this old Japanese lady that worked at my dad's Hawaiian restaurant. She kind of ran the whole restaurant, and she was one of the most amazing chefs I've ever met. We called her the kitchen magician. Like, she was just, like, really, really good at what she did.
That's awesome.
And she grew up in an old Japanese town where they would pound their own mochi and make their own tofu, and, it, you know, she just, I mean, this lady knew what she was doing, and she kind of took me under her wing growing up and taught me how to make everything. She bought me when I was in the third grade, she bought me a Chinese cleaver, which is my first real tool that I had for the kitchen.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
And I remember I was working the fryer station once. I think I was in the fourth or fifth grade, and I was working on the fryer station, and usually you grab the fried chicken, like the chicken cuts, and they throw it out, and they take the Chinese cleaver, and they kind of just slam it like you see in, like, the Chinese restaurants where they kind of, like, they just, like, demolish this thing right across.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it out, and I kind of, like, left the blade of my knife down, and I just cut it, like slicing it, just like, you know, like I watched Emeril Lagasse do. Then the style coming up to me, and she told me, she's like, you're going to be a chef now because you do that. And I just was like, okay, that's what I'm going to be.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
You know, it was a lot of little moments and growing up in the industry and, you know, not really, you know, the only other thing I wanted to besides be a chef was be the Pope, you know what I mean? And that was just, once I hit puberty, I kind of was over that job. Well, from there on out, I was like, okay, I'm just going to pursue my job of being a chef.
You're still young, so, I mean, if you ever have a change of heart, there's still a future
there. I don't know if the Vatican would take me at this point.
Yeah. All right. So, let's fast forward into the future a little bit. Let's talk about some of your more recent accomplishments. So take us through some of those, if you like.
Nothing really too crazy. Like, I got really lucky, and I graduated from culinary school. I knew that's what I wanted to do, and there's a lot of people that graduate from culinary school. Culinary school is kind of a thing where, like, a lot of the kids go there, and half of them don't really want to be chefs. They just don't want to go to college,
right.
And half of them want to become chefs. A quarter of the people that actually want to become chefs have never worked in the kitchen, so they don't understand how hard it is, so they usually are in the industry for a little while, and then they leave.
Yeah.
And then another quarter of that group, they'll realize that they can't become rich overnight working in the restaurant. They leave, so you're left with about maybe like 25% of who you actually go to school with. So I went to culinary school with all these kids, and I was really into it. Loved what I did, and I graduated. First time in my life, I graduated in the honor roll. You know, I had no idea even what an honor roll was.
Oh,
and then I got lucky. I went and worked in Frisco for a while, and I came back to Hawaii, and my best friend sent a video into Food Network, and they asked me to be on the show, and that was one of my big ones, and it kind of, like, took me, opened my eyes, and I was cooking in such a small town, and even when I was working in San Francisco and stuff, you don't really get to cook personally for, like, these mm-hmm. great chefs, and I was cooking for Iron Chefs and all these people, and they loved my food, and that kind of boosted a lot of my confidence and showed me, like, okay, like, I can make good food, and I can do this, and that, you know, I can experiment, and people do like it, and so that kind of was, like, a big moment for me, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome, and just listening to you talk, I can feel the passion and the energy, and I'm sure all that passion and energy comes through in the food, so it's no secret, or no wonder why you've become so successful in such a short period of time. I mean, how old are you now? I mean, what I found online, it says you're 23, is that still accurate, or are you older now?
No, I'm 25.
25, okay.
I just turned 25.
Yeah, so, but still, 25, man, that's just so much to accomplish in such a short period of time, and it's just the beginning. But now that we've gotten to know you a little bit more, let's get into a little bit more deeper into this interview. Before I start any interview, I like to ask my guest, are you ready to make some restaurant dreams unstoppable with some advice you're going to drop on us here?
Huh. Are you ready for the question?
I hope so, man. I can't wait for it. So what's one success or leadership quote or mantra that you like to implement in your everyday life as a restaurateur or restaurant professional?
A mantra? You say a mantra? What did you say? Or something?
It could be a leadership quote or a mantra.
Well, one thing I tell a lot of people, and one of my sayings I used to say a lot is that
attention to detail separates the cook from the chef kind of thing. A lot of my guys, if I see them just like throwing a plate out with like a fingerprint on it or something, kind of not taking that extra step and putting that extra attention into detail, it's kind of the difference of building an apartment complex in the slums or building a high-end home. You know, it's like that attention to detail makes a big difference. So that's something I kind of go with everything. Everything I pursue, it's like attention to detail separates, you know, separates the cook from the chef. And that kind of goes through with everything in life, you know.
Exactly. And when it comes to getting noticed and really being recognized for what you do, it's people don't notice what the things that they expect. It's the little things that they don't expect, which really sets you
big
apart.
Time.
And that's how you get noticed. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how much diners nowadays, because so many people go out to eat nowadays, they expect a lot when they come out to eat. You know, it's not – people expect it. So the only way you can really have one up on other people is taking that attention to detail that they wouldn't expect to kind of like show, like, oh, that's nice, you know?
Exactly. That's it. You got it. So the next question I have for you, Ippy, is what is your it factor? What personal qualities do you possess which contribute to your success?
Oh, I mean, I really don't. I'm not sure. It's, you know, it depends on what I'm doing, I guess. I don't really have a I'm a hard worker. You know, I was raised like that from when I was a young kid. My smile is what got me onto Food Network. Let's face it. It had nothing to do with the food at first, you know. I was like, they never tasted my food the whole time going on there. I was like, you guys don't want to taste this? They're like, oh, no, no, you're good. I'm like, okay, so you're basing this off of my smile. And when I got onto the show, I showed them, like, I'm all about the food, you know, and kind of thing like that.
Yeah.
So, but for my actual, like, restaurant success and things like that, really, there's no like one set skill. If you don't have it all, it's like you really can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to undermine your smile because it is one great looking smile, Ippy. But you know what?
It gives me a lot. Okay.
You know, I did catch a few videos and I kind of got your story trying to recruit people for the show. And I have to say this about you: there's a certain genuineness about you that comes through in your smile, and I think in the restaurant industry, being genuine, your guests they're going to pick up on that. When you're really interested in their experience and you want them to, you know, leave happier than when they came in, that smile that you have really kind of is, you know, it's just the authenticity behind it that I think probably has a lot to do, and it's your passion and your hard work, like you said. But I think that probably
and you have to, chefs nowadays also have to be good with, you know, talking to people and things like, you know, I just recently had a customer who said she's never going to eat at my restaurant again because I didn't come out to her table and talk to the table. And it was, we were in the middle of a busy rush. I was working the line. It wasn't like a personal, you know what I mean? And she's like, I'm never coming back because you didn't come out and smile and talk to us. And I'm like, shit, I didn't know that was part of the job description, you know? Like, I didn't know that. And so I was like, okay. So, you know, I learned that it's like, it's a big deal up for people when they come out to eat. It's like, having the chef actually cooking there and like dishing that, it's like for them, it's like I said, it's that attention to detail, that extra step, you know? They're not just here to eat food anymore, which is, you know, what we expect them to do.
You got it, man. So now that we covered your smile isn't all that you have going for you, the next question I have for you is...
it's mostly just about everything.
let's see here. What's your favorite restaurant experience? I mean, we have so many incredible stories in this industry. Funny stories, exciting stories, just as some of these stories really stick out to us. Is there any one key story that kind of was a learning opportunity for you, or it kind of reminds you as to, you know, what it is about this industry that keeps you waking up every day and putting your whole life into it?
Like a turning point kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe
like a dining experience.
Just just something that really sticks out to you that kind of just acts like something that you'll never forget and you haven't forgotten. That just kind of, and maybe your biggest takeaway from that experience.
Favorite takeaway? Well, you know, I would have to say, for me, one of the biggest things is, you know, and it's hard because it's, like I said, I was in the restaurant business my whole life, so we didn't go out much. Like, I didn't eat at my first fine dining restaurant until I was, I think, in like the seventh grade, and we ate at Roy's here on the island. We were constantly eating at the restaurant. We never had like those family meals where everyone sits around. So I would say one of my biggest actual moments, and it's kind of was a continuous one, is I used to remember after school, I would always come over to my dad's plate lunch restaurant, and I would get a big bowl, like we serve Simon there, which is, you know, I mean, Simon is very popular now. It's like ramen noodles, kind of.
Yeah.
With the broth, and it's, I mean, it's this delicious master broth that we constantly kept reusing. It was so good, and
I remember coming home, like coming over to my dad's spot, and I would grab one of these Simon bowls, and every night, it was whatever I wanted to eat. I would throw in big soups of rice, and I would put in, I mean, shoyu chicken, Korean pork, whatever I wanted to eat. And I would sit out at the table out in the front of the dining room with, there was a group of people, and one of the ladies, this old lady, her name was Barbara, I would sit out there and I'd do my homework with her and eat my dinner while my dad was, you know, working at the closing up and stuff. And that kind of, to me, those are moments, that's one of the moments I always kind of remember. You know, you're sitting in the dining room, you're eating, it's your family spot, so, like, you have this kind of, like, pride for the restaurant and the food and you know, and you see all the people and you see what it takes, and it kind of, I mean, to me, that's like, I see my little brother in the restaurant all the time, and we never, you know, he doesn't have the same thing that, you know, your traditional family would have where you sit down and have dinner and stuff like that, but you don't realize it when you're there, but when you get older, you realize, like, wow, I was beyond spoiled. I had an entire restaurant, my fingertips, I was able to eat whatever I wanted, I could put together whatever I wanted, you know what I mean? There was never a night where it's like, God, mom's making pot roast. I hate pot roast. You know, it's like there was never one of those kind of moments in my life. It was always like I had this like plethora of food that I could choose from. And I think to me that made a huge difference in my life growing up, literally growing up around it and submerged in it rather than being something like, oh, I've always been interested in food. My mom used to cook a lot, this and that. Like, no, like my family used food to survive. Like it was how we paid our bills. Like it was how we lived. And it takes a little more out of you, and you start to really like appreciate food beyond just like the glitzy, oh, I'm an artist and I like to put these things together because I'm a hipster artist. Like it takes it beyond that point. It starts to show you like it's life, and it's not just feeding you, but it's actually supporting my family, my family's family, you know.
I totally resonate with this because I too, just like you, I was in the restaurant industry when at the age of 3 years old my parents opened a restaurant. And I grew up in it just like you. So, like, you totally, there's certain things too that, like, we might take for granted or we might think is common sense in the restaurant industry only because we grew up with it. And sometimes you got to stop and say, you know what, this isn't common sense. This is, like, a lifestyle that I grew up into. And because of that, you might have to take some, you know, you have to kind of have that in the back of your mind. Like, you have to explain things when you're around new people to the industry. But just, great, great stuff. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And, like you just said, like, you know, you take for granted about it and you don't think about it. And then when you get older, you're like, you know so much that you're just so grateful that you're submerged in it.
Exactly. So the next question I have for you kind of sums up one of my favorite books by Danny Myers. You may have heard of it, Setting the Table. And he talks about enlightened hospitality, meaning, you know, you prioritize who you're hospitable towards, starting with your inner guests, your community, your suppliers, and your investors. So talk to me about a time where somebody, either yourself or one of your team members, displayed hospitality or enlightened hospitality at one of your locations. And just like bring us through that story.
I'm sorry. So what do you mean, like, by hospitality?
So enlightened hospitality, right, is like when you think of hospitality, you think of, like, friendliness, warmth, helpfulness, neighborliness, kindness. Is there a time you can think of where you kind of went the distance to display that neighborliness or that kindness to either a guest or a staff member?
Constantly. I mean, it's part of the business. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't pick out one point because if you're not doing it with every single customer, you're not going to be successful.
Absolutely.
You know, a good example. Yeah, that's like the industry, and it's like that whole thing. Like the customer is always right. You know, all these little mantras that people have and stuff. But it's true in hospitality. You have to be accommodating. You have to be willing to. Granted, you know, there are niches and stuff where people don't have to, but that's because they can't afford to do it, and you know, things like that. But like, you grew up in the restaurant industry. If you depend on it to survive, if somebody comes in, I just had someone come in recently, and my new menu that I have on now doesn't have any fried chicken on it. We have a chicken, we do a curry chicken pot pie right now instead. And they were like, oh, this person came in, they wanted fried chicken. I was like, well, we don't have fried chicken. They're like, well, I want fried chicken. I'm like, okay, I'll make you fried chicken. You know, what are you going to say? You know, it's kind of like, we have those moments all the time where it's part of the industry. Yeah. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, the whole example of being like the whole artist and hipster thing, yeah. It's hard because when I first got into the industry, I got into it on the business standpoint. Like my family had restaurants and this and that. This is how you survive. And then I went to culinary school in San Francisco and I became a hipster for a little while. And I was like, wow, oh man, it's an art and it comes from my soul. And this tomato was grown in volcanic dirt that has been blessed by Pope John. And you know, it's like, it starts getting to this point and you have to take, once you open your own restaurants and you're running your own business, you realize I'm here to serve these customers. Like that's kind of the job, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're an insurance company, you wouldn't want to not supply someone with insurance. That you want to supply them with it. So that's something in the hospitality industry that people have to realize soon. Exactly. That you work for these people. These are your bosses. Yeah. You know, people can say all the time, "Oh, you have your own restaurant. You're your own boss." That is complete bull. I am not my own boss at all. I have 250 bosses come in every single night, and they're my bosses, you know?
Exactly, and that's really what we're here.
And it's something you have to realize.
Yeah, you have to. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly what you're saying. You have to. It's something you have to realize. You have to take a step back and say, okay, I'm gonna take away my, you know, my cool artist glasses. I'm gonna put on my businessman glasses and realize I have to do this if I want to be successful.
You got it. I have nothing to add to that. You said it all. So thank you for sharing that knowledge. And this is just another one of the examples of what it is about you that makes you successful. I mean, you might only be 25, but you're wise, man. Some people just get it, and you're one of those people that get it. And we can learn a lot from you, even though, you know, you're just...
Well, and a lot of chefs can get upset. A lot of, you know, there are a few chefs that will get upset with me, the ones that romanticize things a lot more than they should be romanticized, and they will get upset with me for saying stuff like that, but I've been in the business my whole life. I know what it's about, and at the end of the day...
They're paying the bills, man. They're the ones paying the bills, so you got to make...
Yeah, I love doing little events. I'm always doing little events. Like James, I just did the celebrity James Beard dinner, so I can have the opportunity to make whatever I want, but... When you're serving a client, that's, you gotta do what they want.
You got it. All right. So the next
hospitality is the most important thing ever. What you said.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And that's why I asked this question, because sometimes we overlook. I mean, that's really what we're here. At the end of the day, we're in the hospitality industry, and that's what we do is hospitality. So I try to kind of remind people with this question to kind of get to the roots of what we're all about. So
yeah, I love it.
Yeah, thank you. The next question I have for you is, what's your biggest challenge, man? Like you just. I mean, you're going through all this right now, and you're probably learning as you go because you're still so new as a proprietor, you know? So what are some of the challenges you're experiencing getting your career started here?
There's a few, you know, finding workers, I guess, would be one. Finding people that are consistent constantly. Here in Hawaii is a hard thing because everybody just wants to go surfing when the surf's up, you know?
How are you overcoming that challenge, Ibby?
I'm putting a lot of hours in.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I found that giving people a little more responsibility helps out a lot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, paying them good money helps out a ton. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just kind of getting people invested in the business and making them feel like it's theirs as well says a lot to be able to keep workers and make them happy.
Exactly, and what you're doing is when you give people that responsibility and that sense of existence, they feel like they're more valued and they have a voice in that. When people have purpose and they feel that sense of value, that they're being valued, then they want to stick around, and they're it's more than just a job at that point. It becomes part of their life, and then that's just great advice that. I don't even know if you...
Yeah, one of the smart, greatest things that someone ever told me about, you know, and I told them I'm having such a hard time with that, like, you know, being management is one of the hardest situations, they said, because the best way to do it is to make that person think that they came up with the idea, even though it's your idea.
Exactly.
And, I try to figure out ways to do that all the time by giving them a problem that has a solution right in front of them and then saying, well, here's the solution. I'm like, wow, you are a genius. Oh my God. Can you implement that now? Can you take care of that? You got it? Okay, good. You know, like, and then they're like, wow, I came up with this. Like, yeah, no, you know, it's like,
That's great, though. It's really great advice. Yeah. And when people feel like they have purpose, that we all need to live for something, right? And a lot of times we're working with younger people in this industry, they don't really know what their purpose is. But if you can help them find some purpose, they're going to be a lot happier, yeah. And they're going to stick around.
And the kitchen is the hard spot to find people. Yeah. I mean, you hire from the bottom of the barrel. I'm one of those guys. You know, I know exactly what it is. So it's like, you know, you can find some of the best people in the world, and you can find some of the worst people. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. So we're going to jump into the part of this interview where, I mean, for no other reason, I don't know why, but I'm calling it a knowledge bomb. It used to be called On the Fly, but I was noticing that none of these questions were being answered quickly, so I just decided to drop that. So these are knowledge bombs because you're going to be dropping some bombs of knowledge on us, and we're just going to absorb everything you drop on us here. So are you ready to drop some bombs? All
right. Always.
All right, man. The first question I have for you is about what we just talked about, employee retention. It's arguably the most difficult challenge in the industry, and what advice do you have first on finding these valuable employees, and how do you keep them? I think we kind of already just went over this, but you can reiterate quickly if you'd like.
Yeah, just like I said, I mean, you make them, give them a little bit of, give them a little incentive and make them think that they came up, they're part of the solution, and that they came up with it and they get into it. If I give you $2 and told you go to Vegas and I was like, here's $2, can you put it in the slot machine for me? You're going to walk into this thing and you're going to stick it into any slot machine you kind of see, because it's not your $2. Now, if you only had $2 left in your pocket and you had to, you know, you're like, oh, these are my last $2, you would find the one that has the best odds of you winning and you would go for that game because it's your money, you know? And it's not something that's not a selfish thing, it's just human nature.
Boom, knowledge bombs, dude. You're already dropping them. So the next question I have for you is about industry resources. Is there one book you can think of, or maybe it's a website or a magazine or maybe even a podcast that you listen to that acts as a resource that you'd like to suggest to our listeners?
For business?
Business or restaurant. It could be any business or restaurant book that you've taken value out of.
There's this one book that I really, really like. It's called Collards and Carbonara.
Okay.
And it's an amazing book because it's these guys down in the South, and they're fantastic chefs, and they bring in the Southern and Italian like tradition. It's one of my newer books that I've been really into, and they also explain about opening their two restaurants and like what it takes, and they tell the stories and things like that. And I'm really into stuff like that, and that's one of my biggest ones I've been on now. Hands down, though, the book that's given me the most inspiration, probably like everybody else, is Modernist Cuisine, and it's like the unbelievable mass amount of information they have in it about food science and things. And I was lucky enough, we had Nathan Myvrold eat here about maybe like 6 months ago. He came into the restaurant, had dinner, and gave me a signed copy of the books, and it was
awesome, man. This is a little moment.
And it was so
like
cool because I love it, and it's so cool because I use a lot of his techniques. We have a 40-hour pork belly on the menu where we sous vide for 40 hours, and you know, I serve it up like, you know, local style. We do a master sauce, we do a watermelon kimchi poke, but I serve that to him, and it's his technique, you know, and it was like, it's just a cool thing to be able to do, and that's like the Bible, you know. It's longer than the Bible, but it's just like the Bible.
Yeah, that's great, man, and the fact that you get to, like, you know, you read these books and then you get to meet the people, it must be really awesome. I want to rewind back to this first book you had mentioned, though, because this podcast does focus a little bit more towards the management side of the industry. What's one key lesson you took away from that book?
The one key thing, and it wasn't something that I personally took away, it's something that I think is prevalent throughout the whole book, and it's a theme throughout the whole thing. It's about the work, like how much hard work it is to have a restaurant. You know, these guys talk about going into the restaurant at, you know, 9 in the morning, and they're not coming out till like 2 or 3 in the morning, you know?
If there's one thing that you think is most important when it comes to overcoming this challenge of the hard work, what would you say it is?
One thing?
Yeah.
Whiskey? I don't know.
I was going to say, man, I can hear it in your voice, but I would have to say it's your passion, man. You got it, and it can't be for
me. No, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be. I mean, anything you do, if you work hard, if you're working very, very hard and you're not getting paid very, very massive amounts of money, then you have to be doing it for enjoying what you're doing and love what you're doing, or else you can't do it. And that's a very cliche. I hate to be cliche. It's not really my style, but it is a very cliche thing. It's the truth. It's like you need to have that passion. That's one of the things this book says so much about it. You know, it's like, I'm pretty sure the chef, I think it's Chef Tiger and Chef Hudman, two guys, the ones that made this book, and they're just like, it's just talking about how much hard work it is and then how much passion you have to have and all that in order to actually do this. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I really enjoy about it.
And then there's always whiskey if that doesn't work.
Excuse me?
Whiskey's
definitely a necessity. And it's how us chefs don't kill our sous chefs, you know?
Right. All right. So the next question I have for you, Ippy, is what is one restaurant trend that really has your attention right now?
One restaurant trend. Well, obviously, the gastropubs is a big one. I just recently opened a gastropub.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of gastropubs not being set in one cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a new term. It's kind of a new term of a type of cuisine that is so not regional that, you know, I mean, they do have their origin. They originate from England and they have, you know, there's a whole history behind it. I don't have to give you the whole history, and it goes all the way back, you know, all the way back to the monopoly the breweries had back in England and stuff. But the whole gastropub movement now, it's so cool because you got all these younger chefs and chefs that don't want to say, I cook Italian cuisine or I cook French cuisine or I cook Pacific Rim, which is like an Asian Pacific blend. You know, you say, oh, I have a gastropub. Well, what is that? Well, it's kind of like whatever I feel like cooking and whatever's in season, you know. Yeah. That's kind of what it is. And
you to express that, like the artistic side that most chefs have about them. They can really have free range and go wild with it.
Yeah, because you can do whatever. I've seen like a Korean Mexican gastropub. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen them all, you know?
Yeah, man.
So I think gastropubs are huge. I mean, are a big team. It's something that I am interested in. So.
Cool. Well, I hope that.
But I definitely would say my big thing right now I'm starting to lean a lot more towards. Now that I opened this restaurant stuff, I'm starting to see the beauty in, like, just simple, kind of like, I mean, fresh, fast food. Not, I don't mean fast food like that. I'm still talking slow food, but food that's, like, you know, like, that's fresh and accessible for lots of people to be able to afford and get, you know?
Like a fast casual concept.
Yeah, like my barbecue spot. Like, it's so perfect because I have locals that come up to me and people that eat there like two or three times a week and they're like, oh my God, you know, we love you. Just like my grandma used to make it, and I have tourists that go there all the time. A lot of people can afford it. It's cheap. Yeah. It's all homemade and good. So I've been starting to really appreciate that concept a lot more because you can really get out there to the mass people.
Yep. That's awesome, man. And that's another reason why we do this too, is when people come up to you and you realize you're having that influence on them and just making their day and bringing back memories. And this all ties into the real reasons why we get into this business. So thank you for sharing that. Whether you are, your role's in the front of house or in the back of house, there's always new products and services coming out every day. And one of the things I want to do with this show is kind of create awareness about some of the new products and services that are out there that can help us in our own restaurants be more profitable, efficient, marketable. And is there anything out there that you're currently using that you just are loving and getting a return on investment and could suggest to some of the other professionals that are listening in?
Yeah, definitely. One big equipment that I'm using that a lot, I mean, we're talking a lot of chefs are using now, is the CryoVac machine. CryoVac machine is, I'm sure as you know, it's very popular now. It's one of the two machines that you need to sous vide something. It takes all the oxygen out of the situation, creates a vacuum chamber, and you get a completely air-free, sealed product, whatever you have in there.
Yeah.
Reason why I like it so much and why I'm, you know, I've been using it in a lot of different techniques. And for me, it helps, one, with weight. It helps me out with tons of weights. For example, we do a really good ossobuco here. And so we take our ossobuco and we braise it for hours and hours and hours, real simple, traditional red wine and all that good stuff. Then when we take it out, usually we would take it out, we would let it sit kind of in this warm broth, and it would slowly stay warm. Now, as it's slowly staying warm in that broth, you have to keep it at a certain temperature, so you're going to have to keep it at somewhat of a boil, if not a little bit less. Maybe you could go down to, like, you know, maybe you could go down to, like, 160, between 160 and 200, but you're still breaking connective tissue. Now, when you go to grab it,
you're kind of, I mean, you're losing a lot of the product. You're not getting, I mean, as intense of the flavors. It's kind of drying out a little bit.
Yep.
So we take it and we cook it, everything with a cooler, and we put it back into these bags. We make a gravy out of the jus, and we put the gravy back into the bag, and we seal it, completely sealed, and then we can have a whole tub. We can have a whole tub with all these things perfectly sealed. And when we have an order, you take it out and you drop into our water immersion circulator heater, which is set at about like 140 degrees, mm-hmm. and it just slowly it'll get up to 10, and it'll hold at 140. You won't lose any product.
That's awesome.
All your product stays. It's kind of a cool. I mean, for me, you save a lot. I used to get a lot of scraps. You know, at the bottom of any kind of braising pot, you have all those like pieces of meat that have fallen off and stuff.
Yeah.
And usually it goes to the dish pit, and the dish guy is like super stoked and like, yeah. And then, but now he's not as stoked because we keep all that, you know. But it's a cool. I go through about 250 bags a day.
Wow.
Using this machine.
That's crazy.
I have to change my tape. I change my tape out weekly only because we use it so often, and I use it for so many things just because there's no oxygen, so you don't get that, you know, nothing dries out, nothing's left out, nothing kind of like comes into contact with air. It helps with, I mean, storage. It's just a really, really good, useful thing. We make our pickles. I do tons of pickles here. And you can make pickles in 5 minutes with the machine because you're, you know.
Not only are you saving time or money because you're not losing product, you're also saving time, which is really important because now you can get this product out faster. So, ballpark figure, can you say how much? Can you give us a figure on how much you think you've saved annually just by using the service, this product?
Oof, I would say I'm saving monthly up to $500 a month on products.
Oh man, see, that's totally worth it. So it pays for itself in the first.
Totally worth it.
Yeah.
Not just that. Not necessarily that. As much as the most important thing about it is consistency. Because
mm-hmm.
as you know, the most biggest problem is consistency in a kitchen. If I'm not around and somebody else is doing it, how do I know it's going to come out just like how I made it? Well, I know it's going to come out just how I made it because it's in a controlled environment. All he has to do is drop it into a tub of water and then cut the bag open. You know, it's like it takes that margin for error down a lot.
Mm-hmm. Some more knowledge bombs being dropped left and right now. Great.
Yep. My pork belly can never be overcooked because it's cooking at 144 degrees.
Yeah.
It can never. It's impossible for them to overcook it. You know.
Yeah. No.
So
definitely.
It takes away that.
Yeah, so
that makes a big difference because you'll lose a customer. If I lose one customer, that's probably about $200 a month that customer could have supplied to me, you know?
Yeah, so just to recap, not only are you saving money, you're saving time, and it's consistent. So a great, great reason to consider using a service or product like this. So the next question I have for you is, what is the best business advice you have for someone who is new to the industry or just opened their first restaurant?
Run? I don't know. Turn around and run for the hills? I don't know.
Yeah.
No. Best business advice. You know, honestly, like, there's lots of things I would tell them, you know, I mean, don't get involved with investors, or if you have to get involved with investors, but you know, don't, and there's so many little things that it's really hard. I would just tell them, honestly, if they're opening up their first business, I would tell them to be prepared to work, obviously, and to kind of pull your expectations back. That way you can surpass them much easier
mm-hmm.
than sitting your expectations up super high and trying to pass them.
Mm-hmm.
Ease into it slowly. Jonathan Waxman once said, like, one of my friends was talking to him, and they were kind of talking about me, and he's like, you know, something I would tell him is kind of like, take your time, you know, like, don't tell him not to rush too much. And
yeah.
It really did something that it makes sense. Like, you got to take your time, think things through, and then start acting on them.
And I think a lot of people, too, kind of going towards this concept of taking your time, they try to go too big too fast, and they get in over their heads, and they can't pay the bills. I mean, if you have a good concept, and your heart's there, and the passion's there, and the talent's there, and the skill set's there, just start small. And if you're doing
big time.
Yeah, if you're doing it right, people are going to come. If you're treating people right, they'll treat you right, and just take baby steps, you know, and grow.
Yeah. I mean, and I can understand the opposite. I'm extremely compulsive myself, too. So it's like if somebody else has something and I want it, I will get it that day or the next, you know?
Yeah.
So I can understand that too, but it's very, it takes a lot to take a step back and look at the bigger picture and say, okay, this is what I have to do to go forward. Every time I've opened, the last two restaurants I opened 6 months after I had planned for them to open, because that's kind of what you have to do. You have to take a few steps back and say, well, what else do I need? Do I have? Is this going to work?
And yeah,
definitely taking your time is something I would recommend.
Taking your time, but definitely getting started. And I've used this quote before, and I really got to find out where I heard it. But the saying goes, like, when's the best time to plant a tree? Well, 20 years ago, but the next best time is right now. And nothing will come into shape, into form, unless you get started.
And it might sound, and some people might, like, look at me and be like, what is this hypocrite talking about? He's 25, he's got two restaurants, this and that. But I've been doing it. My family's been in the restaurant business my whole life. I've been doing this my whole life. You know, it's like, if you compare the amount of time I spent in the kitchen compared to the amount of time some professional chefs, they call themselves, have been in the kitchen, it doesn't even compare. I've been doing it for a long time, so it's not.
I personally haven't, like, rushed into it. It seems like you seem successful. You have a couple of restaurants already and this and that, but it's not the case. I've been working the fry station and the grill station and the dish pit for years and years and years. So,
and it kind of goes back to what we discussed earlier with somebody like you and I, who grew up in the industry. We take certain things that are instinctual and common sense for us. It's just kind of ingrained into us because we grew up with it, so we don't have to learn those things. So, and I'm nowhere near you, man. You have accomplished far more than I have. I'm not comparing myself to you, but I definitely understand where you're
coming from. No, you definitely are. I mean, anybody that's been in the industry from when they were young, if they understand.
Yeah.
In culinary school, they'll call us lifers, and they're like, oh, you're a lifer, aren't you? I never knew what that meant until I kind of figured it out. I was like, oh, I know what he's talking about now.
Well, I have one more question.
No, it does.
I have one more question for you. We're at 40 minutes now, and I don't want to dive in too much of your time. I know your time's valuable. So one more question, and then we'll wrap it up. What is one question you think I should have added to this interview that you think would provide some value to our listeners?
Oh, that's a good question. One question I think you should have added I'm not sure. I guess I would say, you know, one question you always wanna ask somebody, like, at the end of the day, is why do you do? And I don't. You kind of did ask this a little bit, but what do you do what you do for it? Why do you do it? We're in here every day. I'm busting my ass. I'm sweating. I'm, like, tired. And it's like, why do you do? I'm not rich. I don't have a bunch of money. So it's like, why do you do it? And that's something that, you know, that would be a good question, because a lot of people won't be able to answer it, you know?
So you know what's coming now, right?
Oh, why do I do it?
Why do you do it?
I do it for the accessible market for free food.
Yeah.
No, I do it because it's the only thing I know how to do.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't mean that in a negative way at all. I just, you know, it was just one of the things I said on Food Network. It's like, back in the day, you do what your dad did. Why do you do what your dad did? Because it's what he did. And why you do it? Because it's what he knows and what he can teach you.
Yeah.
And it becomes something like you start doing it at a young age, and it's kind of like you grow into it, and then you start mastering it. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's, you know, you can't just jump on board halfway through and expect to master anything. So I do it because I really can't do anything. I don't know how to change a car in my, you know, the tire on my car. I don't know how to do anything like that, but I can fricassee a chicken. I can make you anything you want, you know, so.
Yeah, and one of the sayings that has come up a couple of times in the show is, find out what you're good at and stick with it, and just do what you do and stick with what you're good at. So I think you've proven by now that you're good at this, so just do it.
Not yet. Haven't proven. Definitely haven't proven anything yet, so we're still working at it.
You're making good strides, man.
There you go. At least I'm running in the right direction, you know.
So now we're going to wrap it up. I wrap up every show with giving you the opportunity to try to get somebody on the show that you admire and believe would be a great addition. So who is one restaurant professional you admire and believe would be a great addition to the show? Somebody maybe you would like to tune into and listen to?
I have a bunch, actually, that I would love to. One of the people I think would be a great...
Yeah, go ahead.
What's that?
No, I was going to say, I don't want to steer you off course. Go say what you're going to say.
Well, maybe someone that, you know, I really get along with and think is a great person is one of the girls on the show with me, this girl Michelle. She has a spot out in Maine, that she does. They do like a little lobster, like a lobster restaurant stuff. And we're just talking, and yeah. Her name is Michelle. She was one of the finalists on the show as well with me.
Michelle. Well, and, I'm in New Hampshire, so Michelle is just an arm reach away. So maybe I will knock on a door and try to get her on the show for her.
Yeah, she's, I mean, real personable, like super, super out there and just a really fun person to talk to.
Do you know how I can connect with her?
Yeah. If you want to, I got her number, whatever you want.
Yeah, after the show. We don't have to give that out to the world. Cool.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, because, I mean, there's, you know, her, and then we got, you know, Yvonne, who was on the show. I mean, he works at this place called Bodega Negra, this new place in the city that's supposedly getting all kinds of recognition. He's in the kitchen there, and he's a great person, actually, too, because he's a bartender turn and a chef. So it's like, you got kind of two different.
Because we do get all aspects of the restaurant. We're not just talking to chefs, GMs, you know, bartenders. We want the big picture because you need the big picture. It's definitely a team effort. So, anybody you can connect me with, we'll talk after. And the last thing we do here is give yourself a plug, man. Thank you for your time. I like to repay you by giving you the opportunity to kind of push your products and services, where we can find you, how we can connect. And also, like you said, this is one of the hardest things in this industry is finding good people. So let people know, maybe some of the folks that might be out in Hawaii, if they want to come work for you, how can they connect?
Yeah, come on, Street Fat Figs. I'm not much of a pusher, but I'm here every day at Three Fat Pigs at Moikoloa or Hippie Swine Barbecue. I'm here.
He's a good guy. He seems like a great guy, guys. And you know what? He's just getting started. So when anybody's just getting started, there's a lot of potential and room to grow with these companies as they go. So incentive definitely. To reach out to this character and try to get on board with what he's got going on over there in Hawaii. So thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Hey, no problem, dude. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, and we'll keep in touch. And please don't be a stranger.
Yeah, if you ever come out to the Big Island, I got some cool pig and whiskey waiting for you. So
what's your poison? What do you drink? What's your go-to whiskey?
Whiskey, bourbon. Kentucky straight bourbon.
I'm talking
Kentucky straight bourbon.
What's your make?
Eagle Rare. Oh,
ooh.
And then it's the top shelf of Buffalo Trace.
Man, you're whispering sweet nothings into my ear now. I might have to make that happen. All right, thanks for your time, man.
I just got a case, so I'm going to go take care of that right now. So.
Great. Take care.
All right, have a good one. Hello.
I told you it was going to be another great episode. Man, Ippy, you were a lot of fun, dude. Great character, great heart, great personality. It's no wonder why folks like you are successful in this industry, because at the end of the day, it's just that generosity and that warmth that you just exude. So I think we learned a lot from you today. One of the biggest lessons, and this is kind of becoming a habit, I like to recap some of the big takeaways. And one of the biggest takeaways I took today was that you really have to it's humility. Ippy, you know, he was a very humble guy. Like, when I asked him the questions, he didn't right away know the answer or how to explain it, but you could tell through his humility that a lot of his success is just that ability to be generous and to, you know, just his smile. That sometimes all it takes is an authentic smile to really send the message that you care and that this is your passion and that we're here to serve. And I really took that away from today's episode. It's amazing how far a good smile can go. Maybe it'll land you a spot on the Food Network Star. And one other thing, too, is how we talked about, you know, we just got to start, and you know, you got to do it. Nothing's going to happen unless you get started, and don't forget the whiskey. That's the other thing we learned today. this is a joke, but anyway, I had a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Please, please, please connect with me, guys. I want to hear what you think about the show, and I want to know if these questions I'm asking are doing anything for you, because that's why I'm asking the questions, to help you guys advance in your careers and to motivate you, inspire you, and to take something away. So let me know what I can do to make this as most valuable to you as possible. And until next time, peace out.